You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is a big week for back to school. Many elementary, middle, and high schools are back, and also college students, like here at Crafton Hills College in Yucaipa.
So this is actually my first day of college, and yeah, I really enjoy it. I feel safe. A good community, nice people, already met people.
That's Nathaniel Gayhart. It's midday. He's sitting at a table with a couple of other students at Crafton in a scene that could be from the before time. They're unmasked inside this airy common space eating lunch.
I do think the professors are doing well enforcing and implementing the rules. Students that weren't wearing masks, he asked them to wear them.
And that's the rule. It's masks on at all times when indoors at Crafton. The school is going all in on masks and hand sanitizer, disinfecting wipes, you name it. Notably absent from Crafton's arsenal, though, a mandate for the vaccine. That's different from the UC campuses and Cal State schools. At those universities, COVID immunization is a must this year. These two different models will be put to the test as higher ed in Southern California fully restarts in the coming weeks. KCRW's Matt Gillum takes us to a pair of campuses reopening this school year that have a lot in common, but one big divide.
It's pretty quiet on the Crafton Hills campus on the first day of school, and that's by design. Just 43% of fall classes are being offered in person. Jody Hanley teaches one of them.
Thank God we're back to this again. You know, I couldn't imagine going back to remote, even though it's always a possibility this semester, but it is just so good to be back in the classroom.
Hanley is a math professor at the Hilltop School, and she's feeling a lot of relief getting back to doing what she loves in person.
Being in this community on campus is just totally great. This is what I live for. This is the reason why we teach.
Waves of excited educator energy are emanating from her as we stand outside. Fully vaccinated against the virus, Hanley feels safe holding her course in a full classroom, even though there's no guarantee her students are vaccinated. That's because in California, community college districts set the policy for individual community colleges. For Crafton, it's up to the San Bernardino Community College District, and so far, they're not requiring shots. For Hanley and a lot of students, masks and extra cleaning are enough to feel secure.
I woke up this morning a little bit late for class, so being able to just get here, I was a little anxious coming back, for sure, just being able to see people, but in person is way better, in my personal opinion.
It was great, to be honest with you. I like seeing people. I like being with students and interacting and, you know, getting my degree done.
That was Ben Zambrano and Nicole Ayub. They're both vaccinated and okay with leaving the decision to get immunized up to the individual. It's a different story for Khalees Gibson. The 21-year-old psychology student would like to see the rules tightened.
I really, really hope, like, in the future they change it to everyone gets vaccinated. So they're, like, less worried, but if people want the choice not to be vaccinated, that's up to them.
15 miles southwest of Crafton Hills College, at the University of California, Riverside, classes start September 23rd. And over here, masks and disinfectants aren't enough. This UC campus required all students and staff to provide proof of vaccination by August 16th. UCR spokesman Johnny Cruz says those who fail to do that will
start through a process that will vary, that will result in some sort of warning and progressive discipline. What the end of that process looks like is still being worked out.
Like Crafton, UC Riverside will have fewer in-person offerings than in the pre-COVID era. About 80% of courses will be on campus this fall, with the largest lectures and big introductory classes staying online. UCR has invested more than $17 million on infrastructure and supplies to battle the virus, including setting up an on-campus testing lab that can process thousands of tests per week. While they tackle the virus as best they can with the vaccine mandate and a universal masking policy, Cruz says they're up against a completely separate pandemic problem, a slew of college students who have never been to college.
More than half of the students, you know, we're now in a year and a half into this, haven't actually spent any time on campus. In many ways, we have two groups of first-year students coming to campus.
Like sophomore Victoria Nguyen.
Actually, this is the longest I've ever spent on campus sitting at this one table.
She's starting her second year of college here in a few weeks, but she's basically never been here. The fact that UC Riverside is a physical place is kind of exciting for her.
It's so wonderful to just see that there's a building with UC Riverside on it.
As somebody with asthma, Nguyen is particularly glad UCR is requiring vaccination.
Having that made me feel a lot more comfortable returning to campus, being in large.
Her friend, senior Vincent Rosso, is sitting with us and agrees.
I'm completely on board with it. I think that it's extremely necessary, just in the sense of seeing what has happened over the past year.
While he can see how some people could take issue with being required to get vaccinated, he's firmly in the camp of your freedom ends where my safety begins.
The personal freedom to spread a virus that's killed over 500,000 people, like, it's not up for debate when it comes to, like, coming to a campus and being safe in an academic environment.
Back in Yucaipa, at Grafton Hills College, school brass like Vice President of Administration Services Mike Strong are well aware of the risks a return to campus presents.
Well, there's a lot of concerns around it. I mean, everybody's got the fear of, hey, we're going to have a COVID outbreak.
Strong acknowledges that while Crafton doesn't have the authority to implement its own vaccine mandate, the overarching San Bernardino Community College District could change direction.
I mean, we see the buzz in the K-12s. We see it in the UCs and the Cal States. You know, it may be just a matter of time, but time will tell.
If a COVID outbreak hits the school, he says the worst case scenario is a swift pivot back to remote learning. For math professor Jody Hanley, adapting her class, even possibly moving it back online, is a variable she'll solve for when the time comes. For now, she's getting a sense of satisfaction and comfort just being physically present on this first day of school.
I don't know how much longer I would have been able to sustain it being at home, being remote. It just feels like, okay, we're getting back to what we considered normal from before COVID. That's what I like about this. This feels like it's the beginning of the end.
The math teacher buzzes into her crowded, fully masked classroom and starts her lesson. But Hanley and her students won't be able to crack the equation facing all of us. If the Greek alphabet has 24 letters, and Delta is the fourth, how many more will we have to go through before getting back to actual normal? For KCRW, I'm Matt Gillum.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. The situation in Afghanistan continues to be dire after the lightning-fast fall of the country's government over the last 2 weeks. Images from Kabul of people clinging to airplanes, desperately trying to flee the Taliban for safety, are heartbreaking. Here in Los Angeles, various aid groups are reaching out to the few who have made it out to help them acclimate and make a new life in a new country. So what is it like to resettle in Los Angeles after leaving everything behind? Mary Whitehill is the founder of Mary's List, which is a nonprofit that helps refugees in L.A. with everything from temporary housing to career mentorship. Mary, welcome to you.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for having me.
And Rabia Ahmadi is the Family Services Director for Mary's List. Hi, Rabia.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for inviting.
It's my pleasure, and thanks to you both. Rabia, you're originally from Afghanistan. You came to L.A. not too long ago, back in 2016. So you have a firsthand understanding of what it's like for some of the refugees, right? What is it like for you and your family trying to settle into such, I would imagine, a very different place, right?
Yes, it's not easy to resettle in a different country, especially like from Afghanistan to America. But still, we are so happy that we are safe here and we are already settled.
Is there a community here, Rabia, of other people from Afghanistan whom you would, who you connect with, who you do things with and and, you know, tell stories and understand, you understand each other about Afghanistan?
Yes, there are so many communities here, Afghan communities, and I'm personally connected to some of them, yes. And sometimes we gather, but through Miri's List, yes, I am in contact with like more than 300 families, Afghan families here.
Miri, what are you seeing right now when it comes to Afghans getting out of the country and coming to California, coming to even Los Angeles?
Well, Steve, to be honest, we are busier than ever. We are working hard and trying to keep our capacity open. In the last 7 days alone, we have enrolled 8 families from Afghanistan in our program. And we know that these families have been to hell and back to get their families to safety. And so whatever we can do to make sure that we have the resources available so we can respond quickly to our family's very urgent needs, that is a successful outcome for us.
Are you in communication with the State Department, with any other entity inside Afghanistan as people are trying to get out? I know they've been criticized so much for the slow process of getting people out of there. I mean, how does that work?
The way that refugee resettlement works in the United States is that the State Department, as you mentioned, it's overseeing the entire program. The State Department licenses 9 agencies to do the very important work of resettling refugees on behalf of the government when they get here. Those 9 agencies will be in contact with the family for 90 days. We are a community-based organization. We work beside those licensed agencies and in addition to those agencies to make sure that our families have what they need in terms of stuff, supplies, programming, and a community support system. As Rabia mentioned, there's a very large Afghan community here in Los Angeles and also all over California and across the country. But when families get here, they don't know that. Many of them come here without a single friend. And so to be able to show up for these families in their time of need, to be able to welcome them. And that's what Rabia is doing and the other folks who are working in our family services department, calling these families, welcoming them, and letting them know that they have a support system in this country.
Well, Rabia, that's your job, right, as head of family services. I mean, what is your first order of business once a family has arrived in LA? Is it registering the kids for school? Is it getting them English classes? What is it that you do?
I talk with the family to get their needs and to talk about their needs. What do they need really urgently? So we get their wish list done and all their needs are included in their wish list and follow up the process to their wish list that all their needs can be purchased and dropped by their house. And yes.
How is your family? You've been here for 5 years. How is your family doing now? How have you and your husband, you have children, how have you adapted to being Angelenos? You're here in LA.
It's good for us. We have just get used to here, but still we all the time think about our families back home. We are safe here. We appreciate that. But our families are not safe. Our friends are not safe. All other people who are not our friends and families, but still they are people of my country, they are not safe. So we think about them. Their situation is so horrible and hard. But we are good here.
That's certainly good. And you're right. We think about the people who are not safe, who are still there and in other places around the globe where there's little safety. Miri, your organization helps with some of the basic necessities, which I'm sure makes a big difference to them. What about the mental health aspect of all of this? Is that also something that you try to help out with?
Well, Steve, even under quote-unquote perfect circumstances, moving to a new place is very, very difficult. You know, we approach this work in 3 pillars of our programming. Those pillars are survive, hive, and thrive. And what that means is that we're taking families through their resettlement experience, making space for wherever they're at. And when somebody is in survival mode, which one does not have to have ever experienced resettlement to understand what it feels like to be in survival mode, where you don't necessarily feel like your life is in your own control. These are the times that we need our community support system, we call it our hive, to show up for you. Being in contact with these families, letting them know that they have friends and a support system, that goes a long way. And there are plenty of circumstances where our families need support that goes beyond the ability of our team and our volunteers. And then we're able to refer them to outside sources, whether it is a therapist that speaks Farsi or Dari and can really talk to them deeply about what they're going through, or incorporating them into the service work of Miri's List. Most of the folks who are volunteering and working at Miri's List are people who have graduated from our program. And I got to tell you, that is one of the most amazing parts of this work. It is truly a virtuous cycle where the folks who are benefiting from our programming are able to stick with us and stay involved and help the families who have come after them.
Miri Whitehill, the founder of Miri's List here in LA, this nonprofit that helps refugees from all over the world. Rabia Ahmadi, who is the Family Services Director for Miri's List, but a refugee in her own right from Afghanistan here in Los Angeles. I want to thank you both. Thank you so much for coming on and telling your stories.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you so much, Steve, for having me.
By the way, Miri's List has launched what they're calling an emergency action fund for refugees who are exiting Afghanistan, trying to get out. And that website address is launchgood.com/Miri's List. And we'll have that link on our website as well. KCRW.com/Greater LA. Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chitakis. And now, before you leave us, something a little more uplifting, a little musical romance. That's a song called Sabor a Mí by the LA band Tres Souls.
Tanto tiempo disfrutamos de este amor. Nuestras almas se acercaron tanto así que yo guardo tu sabor, pero tú llevas también sabor a mí.
The trio is dedicated to preserving bolero music, a genre that originated in Cuba before spreading to Mexico in the 1940s. Well, some say boleros are the most romantic songs you'll ever hear, filled with betrayal, heartache, but eternal love. Roberto Carlos is a musician and a member of Tres Souls, and he's been organizing a concert series called Boleros de Noche across L.A. since 2016, including one that's happening at the Ford this weekend. Roberto, welcome to you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for inviting me.
Boleros de Noche, so bolero at night, right?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of the best time to listen to boleros.
Describe it for us. What is it? You hear the guitar pick. It sounds very romantic. Talk a little bit about its history.
Yeah, boleros, well, it means a lot to the Hispanic community, but I think it has spread all over the world. It started in Cuba in 1883 with the first song written by a Cuban composer. The song was called Tristezas. But since that date to now, we are celebrating a genre that's really rich in its verses. It's also really raw and really, the lyrics are so poetic, and it's a genre that celebrates a musical culture from Latin America.
Is there a particular bolero that you love that we should play, that you want to highlight?
Los Panchos. Los Panchos, I consider them like the Beatles of bolero music. One of the first trios in Mexico that were the pioneers of this music.
Sin ti, no podré vivir jamás. Y pensar que nunca más estarás junto a mí. ¿Puede ya importar?
did you fall in love with this genre of music?
I fell in love, I grew up with this music. I think it's part of my cultural identity. As I look back of the relationship I've had with boleros, it's like it's always been there. In my highs and in my lows, lowest moments, in my times where I've been in love, and the times where I have had my heart broken, bolero has always been there. So I think it has given me so much that right now I just wanna do the same to the genre, celebrate it.
As I mentioned, Roberta, you put on a concert series called Boleros de Noche all across LA. What are these concerts like? And where do you guys typically pop up?
Well, this year we're celebrating 5 years of this festival called Boleros de Noche. In the past 5 years, we've been popping up at La Plaza de Cultura y Artes, also at the Downey Theater. And we started in a small art gallery, but now after 5 years, we're settling right now at the Ford Theaters, where that's the place where we're hosting our fifth annual Boleros de Noche.
Who usually comes to these pop-ups? Do you have a mix of audience of people from, you know, who remember this and who witnessed it back in the day, or do you have younger people who are coming too?
I think that's what's so special about our concert series. It's a multi-generational experience. So you have millennials coming, people ages like 20, bringing their parents. We have people that are 50, 60, 70 years old who grew up with this music. So it's definitely a multi-generation experience.
So this Saturday, talk a little bit about your show over at the Ford Theater. This is with Gabby Moreno, right? A favorite here at KCRW. How does she bring her own flavor to boleros?
Well, she just recorded a song with an iconic figure from Cuba, with Omar Portuondo. And she recorded a song called Bolero a la Vida. I think we all know how talented Gabby Moreno is. She's from Guatemala. She's a Latin Grammy Award winner. And celebrating 5 years with Gabby Moreno and also Tres Sols, it's a perfect combination because you get a glimpse of the traditional sound, which is Tres Sols, but also something that's evolving like Gabby Moreno with the soulful jazz Americana influences. So it's going to be special.
I know, Roberta, your mission is to preserve and celebrate this bolero music and the history here in L.A. Is there a threat that it could go away? I mean, you guys are keeping it alive. Are other people keeping it alive as well, other musicians?
Yeah, there is folk artists that still preserve this music. It's hard to find, but I think these concerts incentivize people to relook at bolero music. And, you know, I think that's kind of our effort, is to create a platform where these musicians, folk artists, could showcase their talents and showcase that they're also preserving bolero music.
Roberta Carlos, who plays guitar in the LA band Tres Sols and is creative director behind a concert series called Boleros de Noche. They'll be celebrating their five-year anniversary at the Ford this Saturday night with headliner Gabby Moreno. Roberto, thanks so much. Have fun this weekend.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for inviting me. Hope to see everyone there.
Vida, te traigo un bolero. Porque me has querido y te quiero. Vida, eres mía y de nadie. Vida y tiempo y espacio. Queda tanto por vivir. Sé que a veces cuesta entender que no siempre va todo bien. Tocas fondo y vuelves a empezar. Hay que acomodarse a tu sabio vaivén.
That's it for us today. Isn't that nice? Next week, recall fever in California. It's not just the governor who could get the boot. It's others, too. Here in greater L.A., there are a number of office holders at risk. You're going to hear about it. And while you wrestle with that recall vote, there's another kind of wrestling of the physical kind going on in LA, and it has quite the following. That's next week. Those stories and many others right here on GLA. Subscribe to the podcast here and see all of our stories online anytime at kcrw.com/greaterLA. And, of course, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Juliana Mayo, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Sue Margulies, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordahl all had hands and ears on tonight's show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thank you for your ears this evening. Have yourself a great night.